Hey, this is Maya, and you're listening to The Brad Gilmore Show.
Oh, Brad, what have you done now?
Yeah.
I can do anything.
That's that new Nice by the Carters. Hold up, I gotta hear Jay real quick.
Fuck your subpoenas and your misdemeanors. Was too busy touring out all your arenas. My passport is tatted, it look like it's active. I play on these planes, y'all catch me in traffic. Y'all drag me in court for that shit. Y'all back was after all of these years of drug trafficking, huh? Time to remind me I'm black again, huh? All this talking back, I'm too arrogant, huh? What would you do? You knew you couldn't fail. I have no fear of anything, do everything well. I have no fear of jail, I was born in a trap. I have no fear of death, we all born to do that. It's just life, I'm just nice. Tonight I might raise my price. Great advice, damn you ho, Jesus Christ.
Hey, welcome to the Brad Gilmore Show
on demand.
It's a beautiful time right now in Houston, Texas. It is the summertime, so it's a little hot, but it's the summer of LeBron. I'm telling you right now, LeBron James will be a Houston Rocket. We're going to get into it. We're going to get into how. I'm going to break it down. We're going to lose some pieces, but I'm going to get into it. We're also going to talk about a little UFC talk, you know. We're going to talk about CM Punk here today. If we haven't talked about CM Punk enough in general, we're going to talk about CM Punk on the show today. And a little bit of music talk. I figure if we're leading off with the Carters, I want to get into a little music talk here. A little hip-hop talk. First of all, June 2018 might be the greatest single month in hip-hop history. And I don't mean it in the sense of the quality of the music that was dropped. And I know people are going to, you know, that's the first thing people are going to say, then what are you talking about? I just want to say that I cannot remember a time in hip-hop history where we had so many releases from high-profile artists. I mean, you started with Pusha T. And Pusha T had that whole thing that was going on with Drizzy Drake. And we had the beef. We had the story of Adion. And we had the Duppy freestyle, which Roosh Williams and I talked about on this show a couple weeks ago, which was better. But it started off there. And then the very next week, we got the Ye album from Kanye. Probably my least favorite Kanye West album, but still good. I think it's still good. Some people said, it's trash. It's not trash at all. It might be his most incomplete sounding body of work, but if these seven records were released by any other artist, like if you went on SoundCloud and you heard the Ye album from somebody you've never heard of, you'd be like, man, this is fire. This is incredible. It's kind of like we set these standards for artists and we set them in our head. This is my favorite analogy to use, but we always, when there's anticipation for something, especially an album for a guy like Kanye West, we almost look at it like a lot of people back in the 90s looked at the Seinfeld finale. When it was announced that Seinfeld was finally going away and the ninth season would be the last season, so many people started wondering, okay, how are they going to tie it all up? How's it going to end? And people started to begin to write the finale in their head, right? They're like, oh man, maybe Elaine and Jerry get together. Maybe George, you know, becomes a billionaire. Maybe Kramer, you know, jumps off the roof with Newman and they die. I mean, I don't know, you know, but people were trying to figure out what was going to be the end to this incredible run, right, of Seinfeld. And when people saw the finale and they saw that it was kind of like this courtroom thing that played out over two episodes, they were disappointed because they had built up so much hype. And the finale in your head that you thought it was going to be would never match whatever they put on the television screen. It would not matter. It wouldn't count. And I think that's what it was with Kanye. And I think all of the drama surrounding Kanye with the political mumbo jumbo added to that. They're like, well, if you're talking like that, and when I say they, I mean like mainstream people on the internet, people on my timeline at least, were like, hey, if you're talking like that and you're saying these things, this better be the most fire album of all time. So he had set this, and he had an incredible, by the way, discography. So he had set this kind of pie in the sky goal for everybody of this was going to be such a great album. And when it didn't live up to the Kanye albums of past, we automatically said, well, it's trash. It's garbage. It's not garbage. It's a good album. But to have that Kanye West album drop in June, right after the Push album, and then we were like, okay, well, what's coming up next? Kid Cudi and Kanye release a joint album. Only Kanye West, second collaborative album of his entire career, you know, excluding Cruel Summer, which I don't like to include that in anything, to be honest with you. But you had Watch the Throne, and now you have Kids See Ghosts. And by, I guess, critical praise, more people seem to like Kids See Ghosts than they did Ye. I like Ye more than Kids See Ghosts. Kids See Ghosts was a little too out there for me. But then, just to have that caliber artist say, I'm releasing my solo album, and then this little side group project the next week. And then next week, we're going to get a Nas album. It took forever to upload, but once the Nas album came out, I was excited. I'm not a Nas guy. I'm not a big fan of Nas. I think Illmatic, incredible. That's kind of where I fall off with Nas. I just kind of think that he had never, what I look for in hip-hop, especially when you talk about him and Jay, it was like, Jay always had, he had the ear for the beats, which is a huge criticism of Nas, which I'll get to in a second, but he just had flavor. And where Jay lacked in lyrical ability, which he barely lacks compared to anybody, Hove is razor sharp. But I think most people would say, well, Nas lyrically has maybe a deeper message in more of his songs than Jay did. Jay's kind of gotten to that deeper message toward the latter portion of his career with it sprinkled throughout. But for the most part, we thought Jay of like kind of, he gave us Dirt Off Your Shoulder, you know. He gave us, Turn My Music, ha, 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 yeah. You know, he gave us the money talk, and he gave us the swag, and he gave us the vibrato of hip-hop. And Nas was always kind of the conscience. So I was like, okay, let me check this Nas album out. Because I'm excited. It's 7 songs. You know, if it was a 14 track Nas album, I probably would go to sleep. But I'm going to get killed for that. This is 7 songs. And I'm like, all right, let me check it out. The record with Puff, I liked it. I like when Nas and Puff are together. And then from there, it just kind of kept going down. And the beats, to me, didn't give me what I wanted. You're going to have Ye do Nas's project. I'm not expecting like We Major type beats, but I wanted something that would be like, yes, finally, Nas is rapping on something that's his tempo, it's his pace, and the beats are good. I love the samples. I don't know if he's going to go soul sample or what he's going to do, but I love the samples. I love the boom bap of it. This is a New York album that Kanye West curated and put that flavor on it, and this is an instant classic, and it just was not. I think the Nas album, out of all the albums released by Good Music, was probably the biggest disappointment. You know, Pusha delivered. I liked Ye. Kids See Ghosts, Nas. And Nas should have had the best album. But I think that there was no organization throughout this whole Good Music experiment. Like, nobody had their album mixed and mastered and ready to go. I think it was like Mike Dean posted something on Instagram like, hey, I'm mixing this Nas album now. And they were at a listening party. That is crazy to me. Nas was listening to his unmixed, unmastered album at a listening party, and then Mike Dean had to like mix and master it in one night, get the mixes right, and then send it off. This is not the Kanye West style that I'm used to. This is not the Kanye West style I'm accustomed to. This isn't the Kanye West style I want to hear. You know, I mean, I remember that video Stronger. Do you remember that? He put out, like, during the graduation era, he had this Stronger video that came out of him making the song. And I remember, like, one of his engineers or somebody who was working with him was like, yeah, this is like the 12th mix of the song. And Ye was still like, ah, it's missing something. And that's when he brought Timbaland in, and Timbaland literally just hit one key. It was just hitting a kick. And that was what was missing. And I remember that, and I remember how much dedication he put into that, just that song. So you can imagine what he did for that whole album. And even the behind the scenes of the Watch the Throne, they were thinking so hard about these songs and these beats, you know. And it just doesn't feel, especially with this album and Pablo. Pablo was a mess of a rollout. It really was. It was a mess of a rollout. And this one, it wasn't a mess of a rollout. But this whole Good Music experiment, they actually hit their dates kind of. You know, Tiana came out technically the next day, and we're going to get to Tiana's album. But I was really disappointed in the whole Good Music thing, because when you go back to Good Fridays was the greatest thing going in hip-hop for a long time, and everybody tried to get on that wave. I remember, I think, like, was it Lloyd Banks did something like every Monday? And then you had all people trying to do things on, oh, I'm going to do two for Tuesdays. I'm going to do music Mondays. I'm going to be doing, like, what's up Wednesdays, you know, time to get it Thursdays. And they're trying to match the level of production from Kanye and what they're putting out back then. And this was supposed to be the second coming of that, but every Friday you're getting an album. And it just didn't translate for me. It didn't have that impact like I wanted it to. And I think that part of that was just Kanye's focus didn't seem to be all on the project. And then if you listen to Charlamagne Tha God, Charlamagne said when he went there to go do that interview with Ye, and Ye played him the album was completely different from what ended up coming out. Like, all the songs were different. And that just tells me Kanye wasn't married to the music overall, and he wasn't, I think he just thought it was a good time to put out an album, but it wasn't the right time. And it wasn't the right time for most of these artists. Now, I will say Pusha delivered. I think Pusha's album was great. If you're a rap fan and you just want to hear someone rap well and use a bunch of crack cocaine references, Pusha T's your guy. And I will say it started with a good album, and I think it bookended with a good album. This Tiana album, I think, is dope. I dig the Tiana album, especially this record right here. I'm going to tell you right now, this record was the one off that album right here. This was the record. When I heard this, I'm like, this is going to be on all the radio stations all summer.
Keep your eyes all on this fatty.
Hey.
If you like what you see, take hands and grab it. Hurry, hurry. Hurry, hurry.
Yeah.
Then I get like all this room magic. Ride it automatic till the sun come up. Boom. Hurry, hurry.
Hey, Ye had a great verse on this. I like Ye's verse. Hit it, Ye. Let's hear what you got.
Bad Trinidadian, need to let daddy in. If I need to spend some cash, fuck it, then I'm daddied in. She in love with a man she can't be with, but she know that pussy gon' leave him seasick.
Hey.
Every time she rhymes, she get treated like the sidekick. And to that side chick, when it got some side dick. Sun-kissed princess, gold toe ring. Smack a lip, gloss, back, sass, whole thing.
Keep your eyes all on this fatty.
Come on now.
If you like what you see, take it.
I mean, Tiana, man. I mean, you know. Tiana, man. Woo. Brother, brother, brother.
Then I get like all this room magic. Ride it automatic till the sun goes up.
Ooh. I'll tell you, that's the one on that album. That's going to be on all the radio stations all summer. But anyway, I think it started with a good album, and I think it ended with a good album. That Tiana album, I like four of the records on it. And that WTP was a little bit much for me. But I think that, you know, especially with Tiana not being like a marquee name, and really, this wave of Tiana fame went from that Your Love Is Faded video after that came out and that premiered at what was it, the MTV Awards, the VMA Awards, something like that. That video came out, and everyone's like, damn, Tiana. And then her star level rised. And then Iman Shumpert won the ring with the Cavs, so his stock rises. And I'm like, wow, you know, they got, you know, and then they got their show. So this was like Tiana's biggest hype for an album, and I think she delivered. I like 4 out of the 8 records. I think that's a good ratio when you like half of an album. If you like half of anything, that's pretty good, in my opinion. So shout out to Tiana. Now, the other thing that dropped, though, if we're going to go back to Nas, Nas releases this album, and Nas has to feel pretty good because this is his first album since Life is Good. And he's like, man, I got an album out. You know, I'm feeling myself right now. Because even at the level I've been at in music, when you release an album, you feel fly. I mean, you feel hella fly. So I'm assuming if it's Nas, it's like to the millionth degree. And Nas has about, I don't know, 12 hours before the album that has been rumored and anticipated for a lifetime finally drops. Everything is Love. Jay-Z, Beyonce, the Carters finally come together and they drop an album. And I think it just squashed anybody talking about Nas. Nobody was talking about Nas anymore. All of a sudden, I'm in Vegas at the time. I'm doing this poker tournament. Shout out to Jacob and the One Step Closer guys. I'm doing a poker tournament, and my girlfriend Farrah sends me some on Instagram. So I go, okay, what's this? Something from Beyonce. Psh, pull it up. And it's like some music video, like a clip of a music video where you have like some, I don't know if it was ballerinas dancing in the Louvre. And I'm like, what the hell is happening here? You know, I did not know what was going on. And then I kind of disregarded it because my connection wasn't the best. And then I go to the timeline and I see Everything is Love is the number one trend. And I'm like, what is Everything is Love? I've never heard of it. What is that? So I click it and everyone's freaking out about Beyonce and Hove. They finally dropped their joint album exclusively on Tidal. And I'm an Apple Music man. So the first thing I did, let me create a new email address and let me sign up for Tidal so I could hear this album. Let me get my free trial in, you know. So I got the free trial and I started listening to the album. And I think that this album is dope. Some people are like, eh, it should have delivered more, blah, 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 blah. Come on, guys. This album is fly. This album is so good, especially this song. I dig this song a lot. This is where they're going back and forth. Just saying. Hit it.
Happily in love.
Haters, please forgive me. I let my wife write the will. I pray my children outlive me.
I give my daughter my custom dresses. She gon' be litty. Vintage pieces by the time she hit the city, yeah.
Vintage brains, I see nobody fucking with him.
Pretty thug, out of third ward, you kidding me?
Sir ass it like his dad, shit is trippy.
20, blue and blue, me, solo my fitting.
City, dock of the bay with a big yacht.
Sipping, Yamazaki on the rocks.
He went to Jared, I went to Jar out in Perry.
Yeah, you fucked up the first song, had to get remarried.
Yo, chill.
We keeping it real with these people, right? Lucky I ain't cute when I'm at that.
Y'all know how I met her. We broke up and got back together.
Oh, God, you got to love J&B. You got to love J&B. They do it better than anybody. And, you know, this rollout, think about this. Essentially, we got a trilogy of albums starting with Lemonade, right? Starting with Lemonade and all this talk. Really, you could take the album rollout back to the Flawless remix. Let's start there. On the Flawless remix, Beyonce was like, of course sometimes go down when there's $1 billion on that elevator, right? Referencing the Solange J, Met Gala B, elevator snafu. And we get that little really, really Jay-Z-like line. Boom, drops it out of nowhere. No explanations. I don't want any questions. I said it. And then we get Lemonade. Premiering on HBO. I remember where I was sitting on the couch watching this with Farrah. We're watching Lemonade And I'm like, wait a minute. Is she saying Jay cheated on her? You know? And Farrah's like, yeah, I think that she is. Is that what's going on? And you know, because we're watching it live as it's going on. And I'm like, man, something's going on here. You know, this doesn't seem like just songs to have songs. And I'm like the biggest Jay-Z defender in the world. So I'm like, well, Hov can do no wrong. So maybe this is just a story. And she's just, you know, like Single Ladies. Remember when Single Ladies came out? If you like it, then she put a ring on it. Beyonce wasn't a single lady at the time. She was married. So I'm thinking, okay, this is just a song for women going through that. And Beyonce tapped into it. Like the great songwriter that she is and song producer that she is. And here she is. You know, she's giving us that. And then when it comes out, like, ah, no. You know, it sounds kind of like Jay-Z cheated on her. And then Jay comes up on that All the Way Up remix when he's like, you know, you made it when the fact your marriage made it is worth millions. Lemonade is a popular drink and it still is. That was his little way of addressing it and pretty much confirming there was some discretions going on behind closed doors. And then you get the 444 album where he pretty much outright says it, you know, even referring to Becky on the album. You know, when Beyonce was like, you know, you always want me when I'm not there. You should go and call Becky with the good hair. And then Hov on 444 said, I'll screw up a good thing if you let me. Leave me alone, Becky. Right. And then this was the third in the trilogy of the albums, culminating in this 5-year story. And I think it delivered. So shout out to J&B. I think this is a good album. And I like most of the songs on here. I don't really like Summer. H is cool. It's cool. I know a lot of people dig that one. Not my favorite. It's definitely Amigos' record, and it's cool. But Boss, Nice, 713, Friends, Black Effect, Love Happy. I like most of this album, if not the whole thing. I'll give Summer and Heard About Us another go. Because I don't really remember Heard About Us without listening to it. But most of this album, I think, jams. And I always love a Jay verse. And I think this was just incredible. So Jay-Z was like, not only did I cheat on Beyonce, and that's a terrible thing, but she stayed with me. She stayed with me. And I dropped albums, what, 8 months apart from each other, maybe a year between each other. I don't remember when 444 came out all of a sudden. It came out 2017, right? I feel like it did. I feel like it did. I think it did. So you get 444, then you get Everything is Love, and we completely forget about Nas, and Jay-Z continues to win that war. Okay, moving on. The last thing I want to talk about music, and I'm going to timestamp this, guys, so in case y'all are wondering out there. Last thing I'm going to talk about in music, Nicki Minaj. As I'm doing this, the BET Awards are on right now. I am not getting to watch them. Because I'm doing this. I'm working on this. But I did see that she was trending on Twitter right as I was putting the show notes together. I said, okay, well, I wonder what's going on with Nicki. Because there's like 50,000 tweets. I was like, okay, let me see what's going on. And Nicki was trending for, yet again, the wrong reasons. People were highly criticizing her BET Awards performance. Now, I have not seen it, so I cannot really comment on the performance. But the reviews for the performance, no bueno. That's Spanish for not good. So I started thinking about Nicki and how I became a fan of Nicki with that Monster verse like most people did. And I heard about, okay, she's on Young Money, she's good looking, blah, 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 blah. I heard that in the Monster verse, I'm like, she's elite. And then the Pink Friday album, the first one, I was like, you know what, this is actually a good album. I liked a lot of the songs on it. She had the one with Ye, the one with Ree, the one with Drake, the one with M. I liked a lot of those records. And then she just kind of lost me since that. You know, she had some songs that would come out that I would dig. Bees in the Trap being one of them. You know, there was a few over the years. I can't really think of many off the top of my head. But and then she'd come with some great verses like the Yo Gotti verse. And I'm like, okay, you're still cool. And then Cardi B came around. And Cardi B, and I hate to do this comparative of them, but it's such an on-the-nose comparison, you have to make it. Cardi B came out. She drops
Bodak Yellow, Song of the Summer.
Follows it up with a really good debut album. I mean, definitely a B plus on a debut album. Got a lot of records on there. She's co-hosting for the first time ever. Someone co-hosted The Tonight Show, and she's out there with Jimmy Fallon. And it's incredible. You know, it's incredible how she ascended so quickly. And part of it feels sort of effortless from Cardi B. And I think Nicki saw this. And then there was the Motorsport record. And then all the drama came out about that. And then we heard the original verse where she says, if Cardi the QB, I'm Nick Lombardi. Meaning, if Cardi's the quarterback right now, she's got the ball. If Cardi's got the ball, I'm the coach. Because she wouldn't be here without me. And right now, I'm still running this game. You might be the person right now who's got the ball and is hot. I'm the coach. I'm still running the game. That's how it's perceived. She changed the line. Then she does that Zane Lowe interview when she drops this Chun-Li record. And what was the other one? Chun-Li and Barbie Tings. Barbie Tings. Oh, you'll brawler. And I don't think the record's hit, but in the interview, she says something about, you know, there's a bunch of girls who want to do a song with Nicki Minaj. She should have been a little bit more grateful. And I'm paraphrasing, but that was essentially what she said. And that's the craziest thing you could say, Nicki, if you're trying to get people to like you again. Because there's this growing resentment toward Nicki Minaj. I don't know where it emanated from. I don't know where it started. I don't know how it got there. But there's this growing resentment for Nicki online, on social media. People weren't feeling her. So when you go out there and you kind of sound like an arrogant a-hole, you're not going to endear yourself to a lot of people that you're trying to win back, especially in album mode. Then you say, my album's called Queen. Overcompensating a little bit? I think so. You say, my album's dropping in June until you pushed it back. And the two records you released, Chun-Li and Barbie Tings, I wasn't feeling. I wasn't. You know, then Cardi has that I like it like that. And I'm like, man, it just feels so effortless. And I think that was the difference. Is that the Chun-Li record, the Barbie Tings record, they felt forced. And Cardi's records felt effortless. You know? It just felt like she was having fun and she was making records. She wasn't thinking too much about it. I'm sure the label was thinking a lot about it, but she just seemed like she was having fun. At least that's how it came off. She might have been crazy inside, but she came off well. Cardi did. So when Nicki releases another record after pushing an album back, Rich Sex, it was definitely not the one. That record was so hot garbage awful. It was hot dumpster fire garbage. And I'm like, man, it's over. And it made me think about it. It made me think, you're putting out these records, you're calling your album Queen. It feels like you're trying so hard because you want it so bad. And I think that you see Cardi's got the brass ring right now. She's got the baton, and she's got it, and she's not letting it go, and you want it so bad. She's making it look effortless, and you're trying so hard. And sometimes when you want it so bad, and you're trying so hard, but it's not your time right now, and you're forcing yourself into someone else's moment so you can try to kill that buzz, it just doesn't come off well. It doesn't come off genuine, and the people don't feel it. And sometimes when you feel like you don't have that spark anymore, you're trying to do too much. You know what? Like, I'll say this. When 2011 was rocking all the time, I used to be like, man, Trey raps so well. He's so good at it. And I didn't feel it at the time, my rhymes were at his level. So what I would do is when we were performing, during my verses, you know, Trey would kind of just stand there, take center stage, boom, boom, boom. During my verses, I got a little crazy. So I was known in the early days of 2011 to run around, jump off the stage. We played at this one place here in Houston called the Mink that had like low ceilings and you could grab like the beams going across. I remember I'm swinging from the beams. One show, I actually jumped off the stage and ran through the crowd. We had a wireless mic, ran through the crowd and went outside. I actually did that twice. And what I was doing was trying to overcompensate. I didn't feel like I had it right then, so I'm trying to do a lot, I'm trying to do the most so people will look at me and maybe I'm thinking I can overwork my way into making people think I'm at the same level. I'm in an upper echelon because I'm doing so much and the music's good and I'm doing so much. Okay, people are going to mess with me, you know? And I think it came off the wrong way a lot of the times. It came off like I look like a fool. And right now, Nikki, you look like a fool. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk a little bit of basketball, and then I'm going to wrap this up with some UFC talk. Yeah, I'm going to do that. Okay, so reports came out late last week about Paul George. And a lot of people are saying, okay, Paul George, for the longest time, you know, even back when he was still on the Pacers, he's going to go to the Lakers. That's where he wants to be. That's where he wants to end up. He's going to play a year in OKC, and then he's out of there. And if he was going to L.A., it looks like LeBron's going to go with him. Because why would LeBron go to an L.A. Lakers team coached by Luke Walton, where the number one option is Brandon Ingram, and the biggest star on that roster is Lonzo Ball? Why am I going there, right? So if he's going with Paul George, okay, now you got a big free agent. You got someone to work off of. You got a young roster. Maybe you can make something happen. And then the rumor was, well, Kawhi wants to be traded, and his number one destination where he wants to go is the Lakers. Okay. So then I started seeing all these Photoshop pictures. Because you know that's what people do. As soon as like trade rumors are happening, your jersey's getting Photoshopped. The other team's jersey. So I'm starting to see these pictures of LeBron, Kawhi, and Paul George, all with Lakers uniforms on, saying you're NBA champions for next year. And I'm getting nervous. I'm a Rockets guy. So I'm like, oh, crap. We might be screwed here. You know, if they get those guys, they're a real contender out of nowhere. And then I hear Paul George might want to stay with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Let me stop right there. I have no idea why Paul George would want to do that. People don't really like to play with Russell Westbrook so much. At least that's what I can kind of tell. Why do you think Kevin Durant, when he had a 3-1 lead against the Warriors in the Western Conference Final, was like, I'm out? Because he was like, I'm not playing with this guy anymore. He's a ball hog. And we've seen what he's done over the last two seasons. Hog the ball, triple doubles. That's all he cares about. That's all he wants. That's all he thinks about. And Carmelo Anthony had a terrible season. He looked like a broken player. And maybe he was just off. Maybe he's getting used to the southern climate. He's been up there in New York for so long. Maybe it took him a year. Maybe next year he'll be the Melo of old. But I doubt it. So why Paul George would want to play with Carmelo Anthony and Russell Westbrook again is beyond me. It's not for me to decide, but it's beyond me. But if he stays there, and if you want to stay there, Paul George, it might not make sense to me, but please do it. Please do it. Because if he stays with the Thunder, the percentage chance of LeBron James going to the Lakers, I think, drops a little bit. Maybe not significantly, but I think at least 10%. So if there was a 90% chance of him going, now let's say there's an 80% chance, right? And then Kawhi going to the Lakers, I think I think he's staying in with the Spurs at least for another year. I really do. And I would honestly be, as great of a player as he is, I would be worried a little bit about the injury and about his attitude toward the injury. He didn't seem like he and the team really saw eye to eye on his injury. And only playing 9 games with what's rumored to be a bruised thigh or bruised quad or whatever it was seems to be a little excessive. Now, I'm not an athlete. I don't know. I've never had a major injury like that in my life, and knock on wood that I never have one. But it seems a little weird. So the Spurs seem like, okay, maybe we trade Kawhi, but why would we do it in the summertime? Let's just wait till the trade deadline where we can get more value for him when people are going toward championship mode. And I don't know why they would trade him to the Lakers. Now, maybe no other team takes him because they're like, well, that's where he wants to end up. I'm not going to rent him for half a season. But still, why would they trade him to an in-conference rival and make that team significantly stronger and maybe get who? Kuzma and Ball? You know, Ingram and Ball? Ingram and Kuzma? I don't know. I don't know who they get in back for Kawhi. And I don't know how that helps the Spurs. Now, if he doesn't want to be there, obviously that's not something that you want to do if you're Pop or you're the San Antonio Spurs. You don't want to have a player who doesn't want to be on your team on the floor for you, especially one who, I don't know, could get injured at any moment. But if they hold on to him till the trade deadline and LeBron's in the next 10 days from this recording is going to make a decision about free agency, does he want to go to the Los Angeles Lakers and not have another solidified superstar? Now, I think another guy who gets lost in the shuffle here is somebody like Boogie Cousins, who could go over to the Lakers. I could see that being possible. There are a couple other names out there. But I got to tell you, man, I think without those two really being in play anymore, I think it went from 80% to about 45% chance of him going. Still a large percentage chance. And a lot of people are saying, well, what about Cleveland? Why don't he just stay in Cleveland? Or he could still go to the Lakers anyway, take a year off, and then hopefully Paul George comes next year and Kawhi can come next year, both as free agents. And maybe he does that. But if I'm LeBron James and I'm in the prime of my career, and it's still year 16, I'm at the prime of my career, why would I want to take a year off, essentially, and not go toe-to-toe with Golden State again? Why would I want to do that? So if he goes to the Lakers, he's not making the Western Conference Finals. If he goes by himself, he's not making the finals, Western Conference Finals, or the NBA Finals. And if he stays in Cleveland, I don't know there's going to be so many people who want to sign to Cleveland. I don't know if their GM can make so many moves because LeBron is looming and he only signs a 1-year deal. He could be out at any moment. So why sign with the Cavs? Right? Why go to the Cavs? Why make moves to try to get to the Cavs? So you can go to the finals and lose in 4 again? I don't see that. I don't know why LeBron would want to do that. He wants to leave Cleveland. It's obvious. We've heard it all year long. So I don't think he stays in Cleveland. And if he doesn't have superstars going with him to the Lakers, I don't think that he goes to the Lakers. If he stays in Cleveland, he might not even make the finals because Boston's breathing down his neck. And Kyrie's going to be back. And Gordon Hayward. So where does he go? If I'm LeBron James, where do I go? I can look at it this way. If I'm taking a year off, and it's really a throwaway season, why not just come to a team that is a ready-made championship team where I would just put them over the edge and get that ring? And what team is that, you might say? It's the Houston Rockets. LeBron James, and mark my words, if Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, or if there's not a Boogie Cousins, or if there's not some significant move by the Lakers to get another free agent, and I'm talking about a superstar free agent,
LeBron James will be wearing the red and white next year. He's going to play with Harden, who's going to be the MVP, even though Booker says he's not. And he's going to play with his best friend, CP3. I heard a rumor. I can't confirm it, but it's a rumor from a source who has some authority on the matter. LeBron James has checked out schools here. Doesn't mean anything. Just means he's weighing his options. But he's aware. Chris Paul says that him recruiting LeBron is the thing he's tried the hardest at and put the most into in his NBA career. And that's recruiting Bron to the Lakers. Chris Paul has already re-registered his kids for school here in Houston for next season. He's not going anywhere. If he knows LeBron James is coming, that whole I need my money thing, it goes out the window. It's done. He's going to take less for LeBron to come, and LeBron will take less. He's like, look, that's a year off. That's all I'm going to sign to. I can do anything I want. Might as well try to win a championship because it's a throwaway season anyway. Let me become a Rocket. And if I win, I got a title on three teams. He's in convo for the GOAT. He's already in that conversation. That helps him even more. So mark my words. No Paul George. No Kawhi Leonard. In LA, LeBron James will be a Houston Rocket. The other thing I think is going to happen is a strengthening of Golden State. I think Golden State is going to get a big name to come over, and a big name with his tail tucked between his legs, with his ego shattered, with no ring on his finger, but all the one in the world for one. A man who's been on four different teams over the last four NBA seasons. A man who's an eight-time All-Star. A man who I believe averaged 18 points a game last season. 16 or 18, I can't remember. But somewhere in that ballpark. A man who was just traded last week. I believe Dwight Howard, who was just traded to the Brooklyn Nets, will be bought out by the Nets and will make a move to Oakland. And if you're the Warriors, why the hell not? You have a guy who's toward the latter portion of his career, yes. Past his prime, maybe. Still puts up good numbers, absolutely. And could be a fifth option in a starting lineup for the Warriors. You can't always put the Hampton Five out there. Dwight Howard could be a much better Looney. Way better. He's way better than Looney. He's a massive upgrade from Zaza Pachulia. He's like going from a flip phone to an iPhone X from Zaza to Dwight Howard, given their roles. So I think that if Golden State can make that happen, it is a perfect match for them. It gives them a reliable big who can sit on the bench, who can start, who can give you reliable minutes, who can be a fifth option for you, because it could really be, you know, Clay. I mean, Curry first, Durant, Clay, Draymond, maybe Iggy before Draymond. So you have a fifth option of a guy who can put up some points if he's in the paint, guy who's still pretty good on the defensive end of things. He's not going to get any touches outside of the paint area, nor does he need them. If Dwight Howard can swallow his pride, shed the ego, and shed the paycheck, he can be an NBA champion potentially next year. I think Dwight to the Warriors is an idea I really like, even being a Houston Rockets fan. Because I've met Dwight. I've hung around Dwight. I went to Dwight's 30th birthday party.
I'm not trying to name drop. I'm just saying I like the guy. He's a good guy. He's a great guy. But if he just continues to get traded year after year after year after year, when he still has something to offer, this isn't like the Shaq days. This isn't like Shaq, where he went from Miami to, where'd he go, Cleveland to Phoenix to Boston. This isn't those years. He could be a legitimate champion and a great addition to an already phenomenal roster for the Golden State Warriors. Got to take less money and know that he's going to have a very limited role, but know that there's a good chance he has a ring on his finger unless LeBron comes to Houston. Okay, this is the last thing, guys. This is the last thing I want to talk about. CM Punk. CM Punk has been a topic of conversation a lot on Heated Conversations with Booker T and myself on Sports Radio 610 to get the podcast, do all that. So, Booker said something about CM Punk on the pre-show, on the Money in the Bank pre-show, and it wasn't met with the greatest response. And this is what Booker said.
And try to take it over.
Let me replay that.
Look, we saw CM Punk try to run in the UFC and try to take it over.
That boy
got the brakes beat off of him just a couple of weeks ago.
And he got a lot of flack for that. We talked about it on the show. And Booker had some interesting things to say. This is actually what Booker went on to say on Heated Conversations about CM Punk.
You know, people talk about, you know, I had him here at Reality of Wrestling.
In the PWA days, yeah.
And, you know, I was one of the first supporters of CM Punk. When CM Punk, you know, came up in the WWE, you know, I was one of the guys who was having matches with CM Punk. I'm one of the guys who had to go out and put CM Punk over. I'm saying this guy was putting himself in a position that perhaps he was in way over his head. Maybe someone should have told him that. So I'm not throwing shade on CM Punk or anything like that. I just think that the decision that CM Punk made was a really, truly bad decision and a bad mistake for CM Punk's career, because this guy could have been one of the maybe he didn't want to be one of the all-time greats. I'm just saying he could have been one of the all-time greats of our sport, of our business, professional wrestling. That's my point, guys.
So, Book says this about Punk, and internet is what it is, but this is what I want to talk about. I don't want to talk about him going there and was it a mistake and all that. This is what I want to talk about. The reason CM Punk was ever brought into the UFC was for one reason only, to draw a number on pay-per-view. That's it. It wasn't to see, oh, let's see if CM Punk can actually fight. It wasn't Dana White saying, let's let a man live out his dream. It's not what it was about at all. Not even a little bit. What it was about was making money off of the brand of CM Punk. That's it. Period, point blank, end of story. So this is what I want to say. In Punk's first fight at UFC 203, this is according to MMAfighting.com, CM Punk's pay-per-view, now, obviously, he wasn't the headliner, but let's be honest, he was the story going into this card. CM Punk helped bring in 475,000 buys. That's a lot of buys, guys. That's a 500,000 buys. He got, for that fight, essentially $1 a buy. $500,000 is what he's paid to fight. He probably got some more on the back end, but that's what he was paid for the fight. And I'm going to say this, and you could be shocked by me saying this or not. I think he earned that money. I mean, I think he was a legitimate draw. I had legitimate interest in seeing CM Punk fight in the UFC, just like I have with guys like Brock Lesnar and anybody else. So CM Punk draws 500,000 buys, which is insane for a guy who's never had a fight before. So when I heard they were bringing it back, some 22 months later, nearly 2 years later, we were going to see CM Punk in the ring again, in the octagon. CM Punk versus Mike Jackson opened up the pay-per-view. It went for 15 minutes. Highly criticized. Highly hated on. Awful performance all around by CM Punk. But people are like, why are we seeing this fight again? Why are we seeing this man fight again? He was awful in his first one. He's 0-1. And now he's about to be 0-2. Why are we seeing this fight, Dana White? And Dana White says, well, you know, he draws money. The MMA community says, well, he draws money. People are interested in seeing CM Punk fight. It's in Chicago. It's his hometown. It's going to be a big draw. Let's see if he's gotten any better over the last 2 years. Well, I'm here to say that according to SB Nation on thebloodyelbow.com, UFC 225 was first reported as doing 150,000 buys. 150,000. Now, UFC said that number's off by probably 100,000 buys. So, let's say 250,000, 250,000 buys for this pay-per-view. There are a lot of names on this card, so I can't put all the blame on CM Punk. But, once again, for the casual viewer, for fans of pro wrestling, which gets 3 to 5 million viewers a week, per show that they air, you would think CM Punk fighting again in Chicago, in his hometown, would draw a bigger crowd, would draw a bigger pay-per-view number. But I think this is just the law of diminishing returns. You didn't give them a lot in their first fight, in your first fight. You gave them nothing in your second fight. Nobody wants to see CM Punk in an octagon ever again. To have a 50% drop-off from your first fight to your second fight is not good. It's not great. It's not okay. It's abysmal. It's terrible. It's embarrassing. And I am not trying to hate on CM Punk, the man. I am not trying to hate on Phil Brooks. I'm not trying to hate on CM Punk, the wrestler. I am talking about CM Punk, the UFC mixed martial artist. And in a business, even a sporting event, a business, like all athletics, they're predicated, their money is predicated on drawing an audience. If you do not draw an audience, teams pick up and go. They move cities. If you do not draw an audience, trades happen. Releases are given. If you do not draw an audience, if people are not interested in seeing you fight, if people do not care about you, you have no worth to a promotion of any kind. CM Punk now has zero worth to the UFC. I still don't know why CM Punk is under contract with the UFC. He still is. But hopefully Dana White takes old Yeller back to the shed and puts a bullet through that contract. Because the contract isn't even worth the paper it's printed on. The CM Punk experiment is done, guys. It's over. We don't want to see it anymore. If CM Punk ever fights again, it's not going to be in the UFC. Maybe it's in Bellator against Jack Swagger, where he will once again lose. But I hopefully think and I pray that CM Punk realizes, hey, I got to live a dream. And that's really good. And I'm really happy for him. I am. And I don't want to come off like a hater. CM Punk got to live a dream.
and be in the UFC. That's incredible. Good for him. But CM Punk does not belong in any mixed martial arts octagon or anything of the sort ever again. CM Punk needs, if he wants to make more money, and I'm sure he's got a lot of money. I don't know if he has enough money to last him for his entire life. I'm sure he's doing okay. If CM Punk wants to continue to make money and go to a place where he is accepted and celebrated, CM Punk needs to come back to professional wrestling. Whether that be ROH, whether that be TNA, or preferably the WWE, CM Punk needs to come back to professional wrestling. And guess what? If CM Punk does wrestle again, if he's at All In in September, which he's denied several times, but I still don't believe him, if he ends up as a surprise entrant in the Royal Rumble and wrestles Triple H at next year's WrestleMania, I'm going to be invested, I'm going to want to see it, and I'm going to be cheering for Phil CM Punk Brooks. If CM Punk ever puts the gloves on again and goes into an octagon, I will change the channel. So, that about does it for me here on the show today. I covered a bevy of topics, I'd like to think, but these are my interests and this is my show, so damn it, I can do what I want. But I do want to say that this Friday, June the 29th, two albums are coming out that you should be aware of. And they're not from high-profile artists. Well, they are, but I'm not talking about in the hip-hop genre. It's not Drake's album. The two albums you need to be concerned with this week, My Brother from Another, Avery Davis, who's been on the show several times, one of the founding members of 2011, the producer of 2011, the backbone of 2011, one of his other projects is releasing new music, Wild Moccasins, a band where he is the drummer. They have an album coming out this Friday, Wild Moccasins. Make sure you go buy it, dig it, stream it, whatever you got to do. Also, dropping this Friday, I have an album coming out with Booker T. Booker T and I have a live album coming out. Booker T, live in Hollywood, drops this Friday, available on all streaming platforms, available for pre-order right now. I want to read to you a little bit. I'm going to read to you the track listing here of Booker T Live in Hollywood. 8 tracks, over 2 hours long. We have Blame Charles featuring Kurt Angle, When Brad Met Booker, The Best Part Was the Sea Bass featuring Corey Graves, Rough Night with Buff, Ready to Rumble featuring David Arquette, Book Dust featuring Gold Dust, Tales from TNA featuring Eli Drake, and Traveling and Tagging featuring Rob Van Dam. That album was awesome. We recorded it back in September of 2017 as a Hurricane Harvey relief show. And we're putting it out as an album, trying to do something good, trying to do something great. And I think Heated Conversations, 2018 has probably been the best year for Heated Conversations. And this is a great way to mark halfway through the year with a celebratory note in Booker T. Brad Gilmore live in Hollywood, available for pre-order right now. We have some big announcements. I'm talking huge announcements coming down the pipeline for Heated Conversations, myself and Booker. Can't wait to announce those when they come around. But I'm going to end it there, guys, because I've talked for an hour straight. I don't know how I've done it. I haven't done a podcast for the Brad Gilmore Show in a little bit, but I've been able to talk for an hour straight. So I want to sign off here. And what I'm going to leave you with is a little song that I enjoy here. And we're going to listen to it right now. So this is, once again, Hov, It's B. This is 713.
This is 24-carat faucets. Louis V and Goyard trunks all in the closet. Ain't shit changed.
Be back soon, guys. Follow me on Twitter at Brad Gilmore.
Baby blue is like, who gonna stop us?
Be back next week. Interview coming out. Recorded this week. Big name. Big rapper. Let's look for the name. Here we go. Let's do it. Still.
Still dipping in my Lolo's, girl.
Still.
I put it down for the 713.
Hey.
And we still got love for the streets.
See y'all next week, guys.
Cool at the pool of Cancun being made. Confidence you exude, make the fools stay away. Me, I play my room, let the fools how they say. Fake, have me sitting next to you on a plane, and I knew straight away.
Oh, Brad, what have you done now?